You are listening to rudolfsteineraudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this lecture, it is located at rudolfsteiner.podbean.com, and please consider becoming a patron. This is a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Understanding Healing, Meditative Reflections on Deepening Medicine Through Spiritual Science, Collected Works, Volume 316, translated by Christian von Arnim. This is the second part of the book, The Easter Course, given in April. This is Lecture 9, given in Dornach on the 21st of April, 1924. My dear friends, at the meeting which we held here after the Christmas Course, we let those things act on us which can deepen medicine esoterically. And in the way in which this can be done, of course, in such a short meeting, we attempted to find the greatest possible access to the esoteric aspect of medicine, as appears appropriate, particularly for those younger people who are making their way in medicine. We also assimilated within ourselves, in individual formulas, those things which can produce a medical attitude in order to work on them further. And we emphasized how necessary such a medical attitude is. Now, I assume, my dear friends, that you have worked inwardly on these things for some time. I do not, of course, imagine such work to consist of sitting there and considering them theoretically, but that now and again, when we feel the inner need, we let these things work on our soul and allow the soul to develop. Now, the way in which we dealt with these things at the time meant that a particular fact occurred which I believe is of importance for the future. The intensely compressed way in which the esoteric matter was presented at the time, in a certain sense inevitably created in one or the other person, a more or less great need to look at certain inner difficulties. The things which are given esoterically do not always exist to make life as easy as possible for us, but in a certain way the opposite applies. They are indeed also there to make life difficult for us, to take us into the difficulties of understanding the world, the way we perceive the world and the human being. So that when we become aware of those difficulties, we take the opposite path of development to the one which is so often pursued in our culture, namely the opposite to the superficial path of development. We can immerse ourselves in the soul only if we become aware of the difficulties which exist between the external world and human beings. And so I think the best thing to do on this occasion is for you to reflect on those inner difficulties, raise them in the form of questions, and we can then focus our discussion on those things which will further advance our cause. To begin with, I would ask you to tell me from within your group what inner or outer difficulties have arisen. Practitioners will have experienced difficulties. Students will have experienced difficulties. There are a number of people among us who are nearing the end of their studies. They will have experienced very special difficulties. We will resolve that by seeking for a solution. Let me read that again. We will resolve that by seeking for a solution. Everyone has also received the first newsletter, and will have seen that there is still a great deal to be said in response to specific questions. I would like to ask whether someone has a question. It can be as specific or general as you like. It will undoubtedly lead us on to other things. But such questions will allow us to get away from the lecture style into something we can experience. Question from Ernst Harmsdorf asks about the course of the year, calendar of the soul, and certain constellations of the stars. Steiner, that is not necessary. You mean the observations of the constellations of the stars? Yes, well, it does help if we have the observable constellation of the stars in our consciousness. But if I have understood you correctly, you are asking what should happen when we allow what we have received as formulas to work on the soul. It works through its own mantric power, and orienting oneself by the external stars can indeed provide support. But you have to consider the following. Take, for instance, the most obvious example of a human cosmic connection which can still be observed today. That is the menstrual cycle. It takes its course in such a way that it evidently has cosmic origins, but not in our time. Its cosmic origins lie in a much earlier cosmic development in which our Earth also participated. Then it became self-contained, emancipated from the cosmos in the course of time, so that now there is no longer a direct dependence. We cannot therefore say moon phases equal menstruation. We cannot say that. But we can very well say there was once a point at which the one was identical with the other. Then they split apart. The moon phases are one thing, menstruation is another. That is the one division. The other one is not guided by the greater moon phases, but by the daily ones. Ebb and flood were identical with what happens through the moon. Once again, they have separated. The moon goes its way, and ebb and flood go their way. These things also determine the effect of the mantric element. It was indeed once the case that what happened through this in the human being was identical with what happened in the cosmos. The split has now occurred in such a way that we must first have the right orientation. If we want to have such support from outside, we have to tell ourselves that what we want to happen inwardly is written in the cosmos. But in reflecting on this, we must, however, make ourselves inwardly independent and be able to experience the course of events inwardly for ourselves in emancipation from the course taken by the cosmos. That is why it is not absolutely necessary that the constellations of the stars have to be taken into account in the effect of a mantra, just as it is completely out of the question that menstruation is regulated by the external position of the moon, because it has become part of our nature. It is equally the case today that all of our inner progression, brought about by the mantras, must take its course in emancipation from the external cosmos. That, as I have often had to explain in the past in other areas, is the difference between Eastern and Western esotericism. The Eastern person wholly takes the view that human beings have come out of the cosmos and have to return there, have to connect with it again. Take the posture of the Buddha. It is a return to earlier conditions. His whole posture speaks of that, the crossed legs, the exclusion of the limbs. The position of the arms is also such that the whole relationship with the earth is immobilized. All the things which emancipate us from the cosmos are paralyzed. We can see how human beings reintegrate themselves back into the cosmos. They return again. And that is really what all of Eastern esotericism is like. It is a move backward. And our Western esotericism can only be a move forward, an ever greater emancipation. That is why it is not so inwardly easy, particularly when used in specific fields. Of course, if you come across, let us say, a particular pathology, and you look at the constellation of the stars and see that the case occurred specifically when, let us say, Saturn stood in opposition to the moon, that does, of course, have a particular meaning. Because if you then adopt a Saturn and moon approach in your treatment, that means lead and silver in earthly terms, parenthesis, as you know, Saturn equals lead, moon equals silver, close parenthesis, and you tell yourself, I will use lead cosmically, in the way it has become cosmic in the earth, and I will make silver earthly by trying to pulverize, dissolve it, that is, change it into an earthly state, and thereby call forth the same constellation as is expressed in the heavens through the opposition to the moon, then you can heal in the spirit of the cosmic forces. But at the same time, you are putting the person in a position that throws him or her back to earlier human developmental stages. Whereas if you simply start directly from what is earthly, the connection of a person with lead and silver, you are already located in something that emancipates itself in the human being, and you are not looking at the past, but at the future. In that case, you will indeed do something similar, but you will achieve it from inside by becoming acquainted with the nature of lead and silver, by knowing that lead works as substance, while silver works through what it actually becomes when it is shattered, dissolved, that is, dissolved into atoms. But you will compare it with already emancipated human nature, not with the cosmos. In this way, you do have to find the right mindset. That is why it can be a help to recall the actual constellation of stars. But to begin with, you will have to use all your strength to allow your own inner soul impulses to work on you, arising from what we have had as mantric formulas, and rather to seek everything from out of your inner self. Question from Ilse Klauer. What do I have to do from out of the I when I meditate? Steiner. You mean from out of the I, capital? Well, as you know, meditation consists of the following. As a modern person, you feel that you have to understand each sentence. That represents the pronounced activity of the I in the present incarnation. Everything you do intellectually is a pronounced activation of the I. The intellect is predominant in the present incarnation, and everything else is covered up by the I, works upward in a dreamlike way at best, and is unconscious. In contrast, meditating means switching such intellectual endeavor off, and to begin with, taking the content of the meditation as it is given, purely in its wording, if I can put it like that. So if you approach the content of the meditation intellectually, before internalizing it, you activate your I because you have thoughts about the content of the meditation. It is outside you. If you allow the content of the meditation to be present in your consciousness just as it is given, do not reflect on it at all, but allow it to be present in your consciousness, then it is not your I from the present incarnation which is at work in you, but the one from the previous incarnation. You silence your intellect. You simply immerse yourself in the word content which you hear inwardly, not outwardly as word content. You immerse yourself in that, and in doing so your inner human being, which is not the one of the present incarnation, works in the content of the meditation. But that makes the content of the meditation not something which you should understand, but which has a real effect in you, has such a real effect that finally you perceive, quote, now I have experienced something which I could not experience previously, close quote. Take a simple meditation content which I have frequently given, quote, wisdom lives in the light, close quote. Well, if you start reflecting on it, you can find out a great deal of clever stuff and just as much nonsense about it. It exists to be inwardly heard, quote, wisdom lives in the light, close quote. When you listen to it inwardly in this way, something which is not from the present incarnation, but which you have thought brought with you from the previous one, is attentive in you. And it thinks and feels, and after a time something is illuminated in you, which you did not know before, and which you could not have thought about with your own intellect. You are inwardly much further ahead than your intellect. It only contains a small section of what there is. You do have to take the things which are generally given in anthroposophy in quite a concrete way, in quite a tangible way. Consider the following. Human beings really renew their whole physical body when the change of teeth occurs. That must be taken as a fundamental fact. Human beings developing a second set of teeth is only the most external symptom, only a part of what is happening. Just as the so-called milk teeth are replaced, the whole of the human organism is replaced, so that the human beings, after the change of teeth, have become something completely new in terms of their physical substance when compared to what they were when they were born. The modern view, which muddles everything up, thinks that human beings are born, then they undergo the change of teeth through a metamorphosis, and then they continue to develop. That is not how it is. This is what happens. Human beings, when they are physically born, have a body including the so-called milk teeth, which is the result of heredity. They have received a body which is the result of those things which lie in the whole series of antecedents. That is where the body of the first 7 years, if we want to express it in figures, comes from. From the age of 7 to 14, they also have a body, but that has not come from a transformation of the first one. Something intervened here which human beings brought with them to earth. Now you have to think of the matter like this. Human beings have their body. This body, which they have as a result of the hereditary line, is a model. They have it as a model. Now, they take earthly substance into this body. Human beings would process this earthly substance, which they take into their body in the first 7 years, in a quite different form, if they only worked with the forces which they bring with them from their pre-earthly existence. They would produce something of quite a different nature. When human beings are born, they do not arrive with a tendency to develop a person with eyes, ears, and nose as they are when they stand here on earth. They arrive with a tendency to form the human being in such a way that they are basically developed very little through their pre-earthly being from out of the head. The greatest care is taken specifically with regard to the rest. Those things which atrophy in embryonic life are developed in the astral sphere, in the eye organization, so that we have to say with regard to the physical embryo, the physical part of the embryo has been wonderfully developed, but the pre-earthly human being had very little to do with it to begin with. In contrast, the human being, the pre-earthly human being, is involved to the greatest extent in everything surrounding. The pre-earthly human being lives in that, in what is broken down in the physical sphere and goes away as chorion, amnion, and so on. The pre-earthly human being lives in that. See Plate 10. Now, if you imagine it schematically, you can imagine it like this, that the cosmic is recreated to begin with. That is really what human beings want to do when they descend from pre-earthly to earthly existence. Why do they not do it? Because there is a given model. And in accordance with this model, they transform what is pre-earthly, using the incorporated substances, during the first 7 years. They would actually prefer to create something more spherical and produce a spherically organized human being. But that is transformed in accordance with the model. And so the pre-earthly gives form to this second physical human being, who then exists from the age of 7 to 14 out of the pre-earthly forces. But it does so initially by adhering to the model which comes from the hereditary forces. Now you see, here you have two force entities in the human being which can really be distinguished. How can we understand these force entities? Take the outline of occult science to hand, on this occasion from the perspective and with the sentiments of a physician, and read the section in it where the book speaks about the development of the earth, how we first have Saturn development, then sun development, then we have moon development, earth development, and so on. If you follow the description of this development there, you will have to say to yourself, up until the sun, everything was one. Not until that point did the earth and the sun, the earth and the moon separate, so that human beings lived in the cosmos until the middle of this development. They lived in the sun and moon, as well as in the earth. Then they lived outside the sun, after the separation of the sun, outside the moon, after the separation from the moon. So cosmic forces worked on human nature until the separation of the sun. Also those which today are outside the earth, in moon and in the sun. Excuse me, read that again. Also those which today are outside the earth, in the moon, in the sun. They worked in human beings because human beings were part of this world, which still included sun and moon. After this, human beings were subject to development which lay outside sun and moon. But now the following is the case. Assume a development which contains everything within itself which is earthly today, and also those things which belong to the sun and moon. Subsequently, everything that is from outside the earth emancipated itself from all that is earthly. The earthly part continued along its own path. It dried up, hardened, became physical. And that is what you find today in the hereditary stream. That has become coarse in the hereditary stream. You will find those things which they, human beings, have adopted after the separation of sun and moon in what they owe to the action of the forces from the cosmos. That is the point. So that you obtain a model for creating your second human being, a model which actually represents something ancient and artistic, which your father and mother were able to give you, which could be created when the sun and moon were still combined with the earth. Forces developed at the time which actually give human beings their earthly configuration, because you will easily understand that this human configuration is an earthly one. Imagine for a minute that yourself, in your essential nature, is removed from the earth. What are you to do with it? You would be very unhappy if you had to use something like your legs after death. Legs are very useful if they are subject to the earth's forces of gravity. If we make the legs part of the forces of gravity of the earth, legs only have a meaning on earth, just like the arms and hands. So a whole part of your organization only makes sense in its present form if we are earth beings. What we are as human beings on earth is useless with regard to the cosmos. That is why we want to form a completely different organization when we arrive on earth as soul and spiritual beings. We want to create an environment. We want to produce all kinds of configurations within this environment. But we do not want this human being, which is of no use to us in the cosmos. The latter is only given as a model, and we furnish the second human being in accordance with this model. That is why in this first period of life, we are involved in a constant struggle between what comes from our previous life and what comes from the hereditary development. These two things are in conflict. And that conflict comes to expression in the childhood diseases. And just think how intimately the whole inner human soul and spiritual existence is connected during early childhood with the physical organization. Just as you can see how the second teeth emerge, how the second tooth ejects the first one, how they are occupied with one another, so the whole second human being is occupied with the first, except that the supersensory human being is contained in the second human being, while an alien earthly model is contained in the former. They work into one another. And if you observe in the right way how they work into one another, then just look at how the inner human being, which was there as soul and spirit in pre-earthly existence, if it has too much of an upper hand for a time, has to work into the physical in a particularly strong way, has to adhere to the model with particular intensity, and how as a result it causes injury, because it collides with it constantly and says, "I want to get rid of this form." Then this struggle is expressed as scarlet fever. If the inner human being is so delicate that it constantly gives way, that it wants to form the substances which are assimilated more in its own image, and if it fights against the model, then the struggle is expressed as measles. And so this mutual struggle comes to expression in the childhood diseases. And we will also only understand what happens later in the right way if we can take these things correspondingly into account. Of course, it is terribly easy for a materialist to say that this is all twaddle, because we can see that children look like their parents and grandparents, not just up to the change of teeth, but also beyond. That is nonsense. Some people just happen to be weaker, are guided more strongly by the hereditary forces, make their second human being more similar to the model. And that is, of course, what it will look like. But they did that themselves by taking their cue to a greater extent from the model. But we also have people who, after the change of teeth, become very dissimilar to what they were before. Then the part which comes from the spiritual and soul life before birth is strong, and they adhere less to the model. And so it is simply a case of observing these things in the right context. We can see it because everything which has to be absorbed has initially to be absorbed, processed inwardly by the child, in such a way that the eye and the astral body come into intimate contact with the food. That need no longer be the case later. Human beings never again get into a situation of having to develop something themselves to such an extent to accord with a model than in the first 7 years. In that period, they have to process everything they absorb, such in their eye and astral body that it can recreate the model. So that has to be accommodated. And the world has organized things in such a way that milk can come very close to etheric development. Its substantiality is such that it actually still has an etheric body. And because the substance, when it is absorbed by the child, still has an organizing action reaching as far as the etheric body, the astral body can intercept the milk so that the intimate contact can arise between that which is absorbed and the astral and eye organization. Hence, there is a very profound, intimate relationship between the external food and the inner soul and spiritual organization of the child. And you see, now you have to get to the stage as physicians of processing all the things, these strange things I have told you just now. We can see in the whole way that the child drinks milk how the astral body and I intercept the milk. That can really be seen. Meditate on the mantras on the one hand by letting the mantra work on you so that you release your soul forces. On the other hand, simply meditate on the child. Visualize how the descending soul and spiritual part initially approaches the physical food with the exclusion of the model, and that what then happens between the soul and spiritual part and the food is determined by the forms of the model. If you imagine that properly, the excessive action of the soul and spiritual part, it will come together for you in the development of scarlet fever. The insufficient action of the soul and spiritual part, which trembles in the face of the model, will be encapsulated for you in the development of measles. If you imagine that meditatively, you will turn ordinary meditation into medical meditation. The fact that people want to understand everything today with their reason is the most dreadful thing. You cannot understand anything in medicine with reason. The most you might be able to understand with reason is the diseases of the minerals, and we do not cure those. Everything medical in nature has to be grasped with direct perception, which first has to be trained. You will not be able to observe these things in an adult person. The digestive tract absorbs the foods. That is an inwardly mediated process, whereas in the child the astral body and the eye absorb the food. In the latter case, there are still unfinished human forms to be organized and developed in accordance with the model. If you meditate on the child, you will see a mighty metamorphosis taking place. You will see how the soul and spiritual element lights up and how food introduces darkness and shadow. How the second human being is formed in color, as it were, out of light and darkness, again referencing Plate 10. You will be able to see how indeed the pre-earthly part of the human being is in brightness, while the darkness is that part which is ingested as outer food. A brightness spreads over the darkness in the child, which comes from what is pre-earthly. The milk enters as darkness. They form the various colors together. What is white on a physical level is black in the spiritual. The opposite is always the case. That gives you the opportunity to use your eye in quite a different way from the way you normally use it in life, capital I. Just look at the wimpish act which is entailed in normal intellectual thinking. That is the greatest weakness of human beings, working intellectually. They only line up one concept after the other. But if you observe the child in the way I have described here, you will meditate in such a way that your eye organization is fully involved. That is something which should also henceforth be taken into account in our education. In a school like the Waldorf School, we have the children aged from 7 to 14. Things change in that period. Human beings have developed their second human being. I might see a child who has been given his or her shape from out of pre-earthly existence in accordance with the model, which has been thrown off. And now it is, of course, the hereditary forces which have been left in the child. They have been inserted into the model, into the imitation of the model. Now the child is much too unearthly. For in this case, the extraterrestrial part has been working particularly strongly on the child. Now we actually have the swing of the pendulum in the opposite direction. Previously, that could also be seen externally on human beings. They were completely a product of their heredity. But now what is externally visible has really arisen wholly from the inside. Now the external world has to be acquired. Now that part which only worked with regard to a person's own human model, totally disregarding the earthly world, has to take its cue from the external world. Now we have to consider that the astral body and eye organization between the age of 7 and 14 have to work in such a way that this unearthly being is adapted again to the external earthly situation. That is concluded with puberty. At that point, human beings have been completely placed within earthly circumstances, have established their relationship with earthly circumstances, and the earth-like has been integrated into the human being. And so the main thing in the development of the second human being between the ages of 7 and 14 is what he or she brings with him or her from pre-earthly existence, which the earthly works into. That reaches its conclusion at puberty, and now the third human being is developing. That is why our own karma only begins to work after puberty. The second human being is substantially shed, and the third human being is developed. The latter does not extend as far as the form, but only as far as life. If it went as far as the form, we would develop a third set of teeth, because now human beings are guided by external circumstances. In the external circumstances, the situation is such that human beings once again incorporate the extra-human element. When they were guided by the model, they were completely determined by the human being. As long as human beings are guided by the model, they are determined by something hereditary. But that is also what contains the element which is withered. Since the separation from the sun, it has been severed from the roots of its existence, has withered, wasted away. That is why the largest number of pathological forces lie in the hereditary forces, so that it is indeed the case that human beings incorporate a great deal of the inner causes of disease by their determination through the model. But they incorporate little before puberty, because they are guided by the external world, climate and so on. All the things that are present in the external air are less harmful. Human beings are healthy between the age of 7 and 14, but then the period starts again in which they become more susceptible to illness. The image of the human being must be kept in mind while observing all these circumstances. If you have the image of the human being in mind, then you are meditating properly. Then you will be able to combine the things you can learn with what you meditate. Then what you learn does not remain theory, but becomes practical experience, because you reveal the power which allows you to perceive it. That is the thing which is so much needed today. We simply cannot achieve anything in medicine if we believe that there is a linear progression in development. Human beings are actually composed of broken off developmental streams which run for 7-year periods, and a later stream will always connect again with an earlier one. There is no one-sided continuity, but rather circumstances always intervene. We only find such continuity, in which the previous thing is always the cause of the following one, in the mineral realm, less so in the plant realm, and least of all in the human realm. Start by thinking properly about the plant realm. What do people do today when they think properly about the plants? See Plate 11. Here we have the soil. Now, people imagine that the seed is laid here and the plant starts growing. They are naive enough to think that, well, hydrogen is a very simple molecule. It only consists of 2 atoms. They dream up all kinds of things. Alcohol is already a more complex molecule. Here, carbon is combined with hydrogen and oxygen, giving us something more complex. So then we get the most complex substances with the most complex molecules. There was a time in the 1880s and 1890s when dissertations had the most complex titles extending over 2 or 3 lines. Here the molecule is extremely complex. But now it gets even more complex. It becomes a seed, a very complex compound. Then the plant grows out of the seed. That is nonsense. Seed development works by earthly matter tearing itself out of any kind of structure in the seed and passing over into chaos, becoming chaotic, so that it no longer comprises any material forces. Then those things which work from out of the cosmos can wholly apply themselves if no earthly structure is present any longer. The seed declares its readiness to model the cosmic structure in miniature, so that nothingness asserts itself with regard to the earthly in the seed development, and the cosmic can work into such nothingness. Dr. Kalisco could tell you a thing or two to confirm this. For the studies on spleen function, we had to take rabbits and remove the spleen from them. The rabbits felt quite well despite that. Indeed, they didn't die from the operation, but quite a while later from a cold. It was indeed possible to observe how the rabbits managed without a spleen. When one of the rabbits died, it was possible to look at what happened with regard to the spleen. And lo and behold, the spleen had been replaced by an actual spherical piece of tissue. What happened? We removed the physical spleen from the rabbit, see Plate 11, top right. By doing that, we artificially drove the physical substance into chaos and made it accessible to the cosmic forces, allowing something to be created which was similar to seed development. Something was created which at a very primitive level was similar to seed development. That is a reflection of the cosmos. Thus, something important was confirmed by this wholly innocent vivisection, because spiritual scientific observation shows that it is so. See Plate 11, bottom right. Take a quartz crystal. It is certainly a physical object. And why is it a physical object? It is an object which pedantically holds on to its shape, the quartz crystal. The quartz has its form through inner strength. And if you smash it with a hammer, the individual parts still maintain their propensity to be pyramids, complete in themselves and still hexagonal. This propensity exists. You can remove this propensity from the quartz with as little success as you can remove the pedantry from a pedant. You could also atomize a pedant, but he would still be pedantic. You cannot force quartz into a situation in which the cosmos could do something with its forces. That is why it is not alive. If quartz were pulverized to such an extent that the parts no longer had the propensity to be guided by its own forces in each individual part, something cosmic, which is alive, would grow out of the quartz. That is what happens in the development of the seed. In the latter case, matter is expelled to such an extent that the cosmos, with its etheric forces, can intervene. We have to look at the world as a continuous getting into and emerging from chaos. What is in quartz also once emerged from the cosmos, but it has remained and become aramonic. It no longer exposes itself to the cosmic forces. As soon as we enter life, we always have to keep going through chaos. That gives you another point of reference for meditating medically. The starting point is that you visualize the fully developed plant as it grows from leaf to leaf and so on. Then you come to the seed development in the fruit, and you imagine that it grows very dark, very black, whereas otherwise you imagine the seed plant to be bright. Then the brightness returns in that it is seized again from the outside. So the life of the plant once again allows you to create an imaginative picture. If you are aware that this is the plant, then that is something imaginatively meditative. You must not be intellectual, but must remain in the concretely imaginative. The intellectual only exists to put what we know into thought. See Plate 11. You could write down the word humankind, for example. Well, that is formed from a perception. All right. When you hear the word humankind, you are reminded of humankind. But if you now come along and say you like the capital I, so you'll put it at the beginning, and the D you'll put after that, and the H, and so on, you can reassemble the word in a different way, but it won't actually change anything in a way that you can do anything with it. But that is what people do with concepts all the time. A concept is only an intellectual way of expressing a perception. People separate and combine concepts and think in their thinking. People do the same thing with their external observations. They impose thinking on observation, and so people today live outside reality. We can do that as long as we are working with the kind of science which is outside reality, such as geometry and arithmetic. But if we want to do medicine, we cannot be outside reality, because then we are also outside reality in the way we practice medicine. The end of Lecture 9.